Well, hello everyone, and welcome to the Fit Me Healthy Smart Start Coaching Series. Today's interview is going to highlight Steph Jackson's digestive healing courses and materials, and you can find those at www.fitmehealthy.com/Steph-Jackson. Helping health-conscious individuals discern how to wisely and effectively improve their digestion and overall health by understanding and applying proven principles and other important healthy digestion topics. Title of today's interview is Myths About Healing Your Gut That Can Derail Your Results and Even Make You Worse. So my name is Linda Osmond, and today I'm talking with healthy digestion expert Steph Jackson. She's a former yogurt company owner, now endearingly known as the Gut Whisperer, about the common myths and misconceptions related to creating and maintaining a healthy gut that can confuse and derail many health-conscious individuals' efforts and even make their health worse. So welcome, Steph.
Hi, Linda. Thanks for having me.
That was a long intro. Without telling too much about yourself yet. So Steph is a well-known expert on the subject of healthy digestion, and she has kindly agreed to do this interview with us today. And she's going to share her extensive knowledge and experience to help dispel myths about the healthy gut arena. Steph is dedicated to you and to her mission so that anyone seeking greater overall health can understand how to wisely and effectively improve digestion by recognizing truth and applying proven principles. So again, welcome, Steph.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Yay! So how about you start by telling us a little bit about yourself, any kind of background, education, or experience in healthy digestion? Just how did you get where you are now?
Okay, so my training is actually in education. So I have a couple of master's degrees in education, and that's what I had, you know, been doing before my son was born, and I actually got quite ill. And I was super fatigued, and I was in a lot of pain, and I guess I got into this just through being human and, you know, having a digestive system myself and having things go wrong and seeking to make improvements. And I think I was fortunate to have also been starting up a non-dairy yogurt company at the time. So I've always been a student of health. You know, for 20 years I've been studying health and studying it deeply. And so when I got sick, I started to read. And then I also was reading for my yogurt business just a ton of articles about the different probiotics. I wanted to make it as healthy of a yogurt as possible for our clients. And some of the things that I discovered really there are only a couple things that can really get me, you know, really excited. And one of them is when I feel like something, you know, unjust is being done. And I was just so, you know, I just wanted to fight for people's digestive health. The more and more I was reading about these different probiotic bacteria, and the more and more I would see labels of products that just have 5 or 6 different strains in them, and just knowing how many thousands of strains we really need for our digestive tract to be fully functioning ecosystems. I just really wanted to get out there and share this information with people, especially after it helped me to feel so much better. Yeah.
Great. Great. I think people might be interested in hearing just a little more about what kind of issues you might have been having with your digestion that got you interested in this.
Sheesh. Okay, well, so I've always had kind of wonky digestion, I would say now, looking back. Like now I'm kind of at an equilibrium or homeodynamics or whatever you want to call it. I feel good. Looking back at my whole life, I'm thinking, man, I've never felt like this before. As a child, I always had something going on, butterflies in the stomach, tension, diarrhea, gas and bloating, you know, but it's normal in my family. Nobody ever said anything that it wasn't normal. And so after my son was born, I really embraced my celiac. I've got celiac in my family. My dad is a celiac, and most of his family and also have celiac disease. And, you know, I had known that this was a possibility for me, and I'd been eating gluten-free for years and years, but I had never really looked into the cross-contamination or the cross-allergens or anything like that. And I wasn't super careful about it, so that was one issue. But I stopped eating gluten, and I still felt like crap, to be honest. So it wasn't really until I balanced these gut bugs out that I started to feel improvement. And at the time, when my son was little, I was lying on the couch, my joints were inflamed and discolored, like bluish and blackish, and, you know, it would move around my body. And I was at the time going to an allergist and going to a rheumatologist and basically trying to get them to diagnose me with some kind of rheumatoid arthritis so I could go on some kind of drugs, you know, just so I could get up off the couch and be the mom that I was meant to be. You know, but that was taking a long time. And actually, can I say one thing? I'm going to extend my story a little bit. But I
went
to the doctor's office, and there was a sign up on the wall that said, "Our clinic is not responsible for any change in symptoms you experience after visiting," sort of thing. It was like a printed sheet of paper from their printer, and it was kind of a little bit crooked, and it was taped onto their wall, and I was just like, wow, these people can't really help me. Can't really help me at a deep level. Like, I'm coming in there with my symptoms, and yet they don't want to be responsible for a change in my symptoms. And I just kind of, like, I looked at the sign, and I kind of thought, should I cry? Like, is this it? Is it rock bottom? Is this what it feels like? And then I just was like, no, you know what? And I just left the clinic, and I just started to apply everything that I had learned for my yogurt company to my own digestive system. Gosh darn it, it helped.
And it worked. And it worked, right?
Yeah,
and it worked
yeah.
well. I mean, I've known you, yeah. I'm not sure how long I've known you now, but over a year, I think. And yes, you seem very well. Nothing like the lying on the couch in pain. And I imagine there are a lot of people that can relate to the symptoms you've had. Maybe not exactly the same, but joint pain and inflammation and things like that.
Yeah, and also just the feeling that my body was, it was the first time in my life that I had really, well, besides labor, the first time in my life that I really felt my body just doing crazy things that I didn't know what it was doing. Like, I felt really mortal and in pain, you know, and I would be the first person to get up off the couch and do what's required, be the mom that I want to be, and I just couldn't, you know?
So you're saying, I think, Steph, that even your determination wasn't enough. You mean you absolutely couldn't. You couldn't do function.
Right.
You couldn't function.
Exactly. Yeah, or when people would touch me, I would just kind of, like, scream, like, ow!
Wow.
Don't give me a hug. So it gave me a lot of empathy for people.
Right.
And again,
right, and
I'm... Yeah, ready to fight for the cause, you know, for people's health.
Right. So you experiencing sort of that injustice or lack of help maybe has set you on a mission to help others. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's correct. And it's not that anybody was unqualified to help me. They were all doing what their specialty was in the helping. It's just that nobody's specialty was to continue to ask the question, why? Why is this happening? Why are the joints inflamed? Why is this? Why is that? What's really at the root? You know, when we get all the way down to the root cause, there are really only a few things, you know, genetics, being born a certain way, being in a certain environment, having a certain kind of incident or trauma, digestive bacteria, being out of balance. You know, there are only a few real things at the bottom of everything when you keep asking why that can lead to these kind of cascading problems. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Just so far.
Okay, well, let's let's lead into the first misconception then, because maybe people feel like there are a lot of reasons why. And so let's kind of debunk some of this and maybe it'll become more clear to people. So what would you say is the first myth or misconception that even health conscious individuals have about healthy digestion?
Yeah, so I would say that anything is either good or bad is a bit of a misconception. And that includes probiotics, because that's really, you know, what we're here to talk about. We think that bacteria are either the good bacteria or the bad bacteria. And this is really just, I mean, it's just not the case. They're all working in concert with each other, and everything depends on the situation. It depends on the person's biochemistry that is coexisting with the bacteria. It depends on the whole colony, the whole community of bacteria, and how many of each, you know, type or how many of each byproducts they're each producing, and how that really affects the body. It's not so much that there are certain bad ones that make you sick. It's more, what is the net, like what's going on with the whole community together? It's like they each have their own song to sing. They each have their own song chart. And it really just depends on what that sounds like with them all together, if that makes any sense.
Yes, it makes sense. So I hear you saying that you can't look at the name of a bacteria even on a piece of paper if someone is familiar with any or sees some and says, this one is good, we don't want it, we do what we can to get rid of it, and this one is good. I'm sorry, did I say, this one is bad, first one is bad.
Good, yeah.
Yeah, I think they were both good. Okay, so maybe everything is good. No, so the first one is bad and we want to eliminate, and this one is good, so I want to take it in a pill. Is that common thinking, do you think?
Yeah, I think it's common thinking. And to be fair, there are certain bacteria that can make us really sick in a hurry. And it's about 2% of the bacteria that we would encounter, like, in our day-to-day realities, in our kitchens and in our environments and out in the world, touching doorknobs and whatever.
Okay.
So, so it's about 2% of bacteria. And if... you know, we don't all get sick when we encounter them. So what's going on there? What's the missing piece of the puzzle? So there's about 2%. And then there are those few bacteria that can kind of set off an imbalance. So certain ones that are able to kind of rally the other bacteria and just kind of get things out of balance. There are the ones that can do that in a good way and in a more negative way, as it impacts us.
Okay.
But it doesn't mean that if they show up that they're necessarily hurting the person. It depends on, you know, if the person has symptoms and what the symptoms are, you know? Yeah.
Okay. So it sounds like things are not so cut and dried.
Yeah. They're not super cut and dried. You know, but then I just... like, to be fair, like, if I'm looking at somebody's stool test and I see an overgrowth of E. coli or whatever, like, we kind of know that there's too many of them. You know, whether they're good or bad, it's the good E. coli most of the time. You know, there's still too many of them. So that's pretty cut and dry that we need less and we need more of something else.
Right.
Not
so straightforward as E. coli is good or E. coli is bad. But like you
exactly.
said before, how does it fit into the whole picture? And you referred to something, and I think it would be good to just give a little frame of reference. So you talked about your background and kind of how you got into things now for yourself. But you just said when you're looking at stool samples, so you're implying that you have seen other clients as well. Is this true?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you have over the years had a practice then of some sort of helping other people to regain better balance.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Yay. And I think our family is one of those that have benefited. I will just tell a story that One of our daughters has been living overseas and had an extremely high strep count for years and had been taking antibiotics, which I don't particularly promote, but she had to function and then had gotten other things on top of that. And so when she was home for a short period of time before she, when she came back to the States and then moved off for another job position, I was so thankful because I had Steph's program that I was working through for other clients and was able to apply that to my daughter. And so thankful she is without antibiotics, without sickness, and this hasn't happened in years. So thank you, Steph. I just really appreciate what you do because it works. It really works. And then just you being you because you're so compassionate and you take us as individuals, and I love that. What would you say, is there an action step, do you feel, that people could apply this? What is the truth if the misconception is that something is good or bad? What is your truth? What would you say is a better concept for people to embrace to further their healing?
I would have to say, after thinking about this for years and trying to, because I like to simplify things, I don't like it to sound like rocket science, because it's not. I would think that the single truth that I can continue to hold is that diversity is paramount. Diversity is so important for each of us.
That's great.
Let me make two truths. Diversity and connection with the natural environment. So as many bacteria from fresh, organic, local foods, you know, where they've made an effort to build up the soil organisms and mineral content, you know, really healthy plants, to eat them fresh and to ferment them or to buy fermented foods locally, buy a variety of different ones and consume them as a regular part of the diet. I think this is a great thing to hold on to if you're not in a place of really compromised chronic digestive problems, because in some people they can't really handle that. But for most of us, just being able to do that is a great truth. And that just connects us to the local foods, to the local soil, to the local bacteria that we really need to thrive and be healthy, and gives us more diversity than what we would get in a store-bought yogurt.
Great. I really like that because, you know, I've heard for years now, buy local, eat local, and, you know, I used to think in terms of just, okay, I'm supporting the local farmer. But what you have brought to the table for me in going through your courses is the understanding that this isn't just about local support. It's about a local ecosystem that you are bringing from the external world into your internal world. And it is well established, and maybe you should be saying this. You can say it better than I can,
right.
But it's working with something that's already working and
right.
Making it part of your health. Am I saying that okay?
Totally. I'm going to just paint this out a little bit. So
okay.
I'm sitting here in the Pacific Northwest. It's pouring rain. I'm sitting in my car during this interview. I'm looking at this tree, no matter how much it rains and no matter how soggy it gets, is not going to grow fungus. These cedar trees are not going to grow fungus. They've developed their own like antifungal properties. And the fir trees and the pine trees, which are actually kind of edible here, the grand fir and everything, I'm looking at these trees here, they're not going to grow fungus. The bacteria that live on them have antifungal properties. The oils in the trees have antifungal properties. Like there's so much in our natural environment that helps these things to stay in balance. And here we are in our houses eating processed food from who knows where, and not, I'm pretty sure that the people listening to this interview are not those people. I bet you You know, I bet you I'm preaching to the converted here. But we're eating foods from far away that we're losing our connection to the intelligence of the bacteria in our very environment that are suited to be stable in the environmental conditions in which we live. You know, they've done so many recent studies on human populations around the world, and like some of the bacteria that we're going to talk about later in the interview, we're going to talk about bacteria that are really, really beneficial for almost everybody. And yet there are people that don't even have these bacteria. They have something completely different because they live somewhere completely different.
Wow.
And so we're all so different depending on where we live, and I think we should go with that.
Wow, that's amazing. That is amazing. And I like the word that you used, intelligence. We're disconnected from the intelligence of the bacteria. And I know some people might hear that and take it metaphorically. And we probably won't go into this right now. But I think you're talking literally intelligence of the bacteria, which, like I said, we probably don't need to get into that unless you want to make a comment. And we'll go on to the second myth.
Yeah. I mean, I think that they're brilliant, right? Like they replicate every half hour, a lot of them. They can develop immunity to things much quicker than we can.
Communicate, right? Yeah. They've learned that they have communication systems with each other and can
pass on
information.
Yeah, so even across different species. You know, so if one of them becomes immune to something, they can just tell all the other species. Like, it's not even all the E. coli's become immune to something. It's in whatever colony that they're living, they can share that with all the other bacteria or with a lot of them. So, taking a really human-centric perspective on this, like, let's take advantage of that instead of being afraid of it. Use it to your advantage.
Yeah, that's amazing. All right. Well, that was... I'm just fascinated. I get fascinated by, I mean, a lot of the research. I listen to so much, and we talk so much about, you know, new discoveries, and I just think it's quite amazing. It's an amazing inner world and outer world and all that we probably know very little about, to be honest.
Right. Yeah, we totally don't know.
What would you say, Steph, is the second biggest myth or misconception that we might have about healthy digestion?
So I think we alluded to this a bit, and I really think that there's a huge misconception among everybody, including holistic professionals and really educated consumers and myself too, that probiotics from the store are good for everybody. And that's
so you're going to tell us that they're not?
Sorry.
I knew it. I'm just baiting you.
Yeah, you saw that one coming. That's it, right?
Tell us why. Tell us why not, then. Why not? Or who not? Who are they not good for? Or however you want to tell us.
Super good example. Okay, so E. coli, who I'm totally painting to be the villain in this. I feel bad, sorry. If they become overgrown, or if other bacteria can become overgrown in the large or in the small intestine, they create their own environment. And in our different parts of our digestive system, we want different environments because they have different functions, you know, even down to different minerals being absorbed in different parts of the small intestine. And but it's not that complicated. So the small intestine needs to be a much higher pH than the large intestine. The large intestine needs to be more acidic. So those very strongly acid-producing bacteria can work quite well in the large intestine. But when they get into the small intestine and they're producing too much of something called D-lactic acid, it can really change the environment in there. It's not an acid that our bodies really have many ways to deal with. And so it can build up and just create more of an acidic environment than we would want in there, which interferes with our, you know, mineral absorption, and also just sets up kind of a place that other less helpful bacteria for our interests might want to live. Mm-hmm. So can contribute to other infections. And a lot of the store-bought probiotics have these D-lactic acid producing bacteria. A lot of these lactobacillus bacteria, or most of them, produce D-lactic acid. And so if there's already too much of that going on in there, then we're just adding more to that. You know, it's not always that simple. Like, they all kind of produce something different and, you know, can change the environment in different ways, but can also just make our symptoms, like, a lot worse.
Mm-hmm. So how would someone know, Steph, if they're taking one of these lactobacillus bacteria or multiple strains? Like, okay, when I've been taking probiotics or knowing about them for years and years, and I would just call, if I was in, you know, interchangeable term, instead of probiotic, I would just say acidophilus, because that's what everybody took, was acidophilus. But that's one of the ones you're referring to here, right?
Yeah, totally. It is, yeah.
So how does someone know if they're taking something from the store or elsewhere, whatever, and they're getting too much and it's changing the inner environment and they're not absorbing their minerals, and, you know, what do you want to list some symptoms, or how do they know?
Okay, so there's a couple of ways to look at this. So if the digestive tract is moving well, if the small intestinal motility, sorry about that, if the small intestinal motility is good, if the stomach acid is good, if the liver function is good, you can probably, it'd be really hard to technically overdose on probiotics, because those lactobacillus are transient and they'll just move on through. But if there's already an overgrowth of something, and it's usually spearheaded by the E. coli or the Enterobacter or those other guys, if there's already that going on, the person's going to feel, you know, gas and bloating, possible adrenal fatigue. It's very connected to adrenal fatigue. What else? You know, they might be Googling acidosis, like trying to eat a more alkaline diet, and just not really seeing results. But then when they take the probiotic, they might feel worse. So they'll get more gas and bloating and feel worse in general. And so I always say, a general rule, if you feel worse when you take a probiotic, it doesn't necessarily mean it's bad for you. Back off of it to an amount that feels good to you and doesn't cause the symptoms. And then work your way back up.
Okay.
But let's say you work your way back up and you still feel bad, and that lasts for 2 weeks. If you can take a probiotic and still feel bad taking it, if it's still making you feel worse after 2 weeks, then you maybe have a larger imbalance going on.
Okay. So it's not just a matter of finding the right dose. I hear you talking about finding the right balance of bacteria, the right strains even, and just knowing what all you're dealing with in there, because they're not all probiotic bacteria either. We've got, and I'm not going to say bad because we just dispelled that one, but we've got some that could be aggravating or overgrown, correct?
Right, yeah, just kind of continuing the imbalance that's already there, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. What you mentioned earlier, like, each of the bacteria have jobs to do, at least you mentioned byproducts. And so can you give an example of what that means? Like, you just said that these bacteria are going to be producing D-lactic acid, which could get us in trouble if there's too much. Right. What are some of the other byproducts, and how does our body deal with those?
Okay, I'm totally going to redeem our little villain, E. coli, here. I opened this up and given me an opportunity to, so nobody's all bad. So yeah, they're producing D-lactic acid, and when there's too much of that, It's really sad. But they also produce glutathione, which is like major antioxidant in our bodies. That's cool.
Right.
You know, there are some bacteria like Citrobacter that produce histamine, which, you know, for a person who has like seasonal allergies or a lot of food allergies or really thin mucosal lining in their digestive tract or histamine intolerance, the histamine might be a problem for them. But there are other bacteria that can produce enzymes that can eat the histamine, like the bifidobacteria. And so there's quite the balance going on. You know, there are bacteria that will eat fat-soluble toxins in our large intestines. And so if our liver is getting rid of those, there are actually bacteria that can consume those. And so, yeah, it's a matter of what everybody's making and what's getting used. And along with that is what we're using or what we're not able to absorb and utilize and what's left over for them to utilize, which can also contribute to a lot of imbalance.
Okay. Can you just give one example of the fat-soluble toxins just so people have a clue what you mean by that?
Yeah. So let's say, you know, plastic water bottles, you know, the xenoestrogens.
Mm-hmm, like BPA or phthalates and things like that?
Let's even just say our harmful estrogens that we naturally produce, right? And then some people end up not getting detoxified very well, and they end up being at risk of hormonal cancers.
Yes.
Well, there are bacteria that can help us to detoxify these harmful estrogens. And then there are organisms that can get in the way of that, like candida. Given too much information, but yeah. But
no,
I think it's important to know. Yeah.
Yeah, and there are other factors that can get in the way, like genetics, because I'm one of those that has quite a few genetic little issues. So.
Right.
But that we do the best we can with balancing the gut bacteria so that we have, you know, all the ammunition that we, you know, can use for our health. That maybe ammunition isn't the right word, but we get everybody on board, right, to work together.
Right. Totally.
So that we can.
But yeah, just the genetic thing. I just, you know, when we do the 23andMe and we go through the genetic results and we end up at the end and, you know, people are thinking, ooh, I have the breast cancer gene.
Mm-hmm.
It's not actually breast cancer gene. It's
right.
Just, you know, your body's having trouble detoxifying that stuff.
Right.
So this is just one of the things that can go along with that. Those bacteria that detoxify that might end up overgrowing because there's just a lot of more of that to detoxify, a lot more food for them to eat. So they're going to proliferate. So it all kind of goes together.
Right. Though the genetics, knowing some of that can be helpful, and I think it has been helpful for me, it's not the end of the story, right? We've got our epigenetics. We've got our environment. We've got our internal environment. We've got how we handle stress, our sleep, our, you know, nutrition, all that. So that is the big picture. We need the big picture, not just the little picture, right?
Totally. But yeah, so those genes might represent, you know, a biochemical pathway that works a little bit differently in you than it does to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be hopefully reflected in your microbiome being a little bit different than somebody else's.
Right. So some people aren't aware of this, I would assume, at this point in time, because now there's so much talk about it, but we are all diverse. We don't have the same bacteria inside. We're unique. I mean, it's like a fingerprint, right? Our microbiome is unique to us.
Yeah.
Excellent. So we just talked about that all probiotics, and I think you probably clarified, unless there's anything else you want to add about how we think about that differently.
Right. So I think one step. So instead of just making sure I don't just give everyone some bad news. So one action step would be to note that at least here, like where I live in Canada, where you live in the States, and most of like the developed world, bifidobacteria is a really good kind of base bacteria to help to set up building the right kinds of colonies in our large intestines. And that's one of the safer ones. Like any of the bifidobacteria are some of the safer bacteria to start with. So if you're not sure what's right for you, start with mm-hmm. that.
Yes. That's yeah. good. That's good. And I'll have some of your favorite sources on the documents that go with the interview. How's that? We'll have some of
that
your favorite
awesome.
Bifidum. And I tell people the same thing. I feel like most people can start with the bifidum. So great. Okay. So we're to our third myth. And what would you like to tell us that we might be believing or some people believe that would not benefit us too much?
Right. Okay. So I believe that there's a bit of a myth out there, and I think it's connected to like this kind of paradigm of healing that we're in, which is like, ooh, I have something wrong, fix it. Or I'll find the solution and then I'll fix it. I believe that the third biggest myth, or maybe the biggest myth, is that we can just heal our guts and that'll be done. It's like, ooh, something's wrong with my gut. I have leaky gut. Let me heal it. And then it's done. And I believe that to just not be the case. And just before we actually connected, while I was fiddling with the phone numbers at the beginning of the call, I was hiding in my car here. I've got a mirror here. And I was looking at my skin, and I have these puppies, and they've been scratching my face. You know, and the scratches get infected. And so it's almost like we would look at our external skin. Like, it would be so crazy if I looked at my external skin and I saw this one scratch and I was like, okay, I'll just heal this scratch and then everything's going to be awesome with my skin forever. But it's not. I'm going to continue to wash my hands, you know, put cream on my eyes before I go to bed, you know, clean my scalp. Like, I'm going to keep taking care of my skin, my external skin. I'm going to have showers, right? Like, it's the same. The skin on the inside of our bodies is skin. And stuff happens to skin. There's cell turnover, which is fairly quick, actually. It's one of the quickest places in our body with cell turnover because it's so important. And there's just this kind of continual interaction between food. And it would be like if we took broccoli and just rubbed it on this place on our arm, like over and over and over again.
Probably not.
probably not. But, you know, it's kind of like it's just exposed to so many different foods over and over again. Simply eating a very large meal can actually cause intestinal permeability. And which then should heal fairly quickly if everything is in place for it to heal. You know, but if there's inflammation, if there's the wrong bacteria living in there, if there's a yeast overgrowth, you know, if there's the mucosa is too thin, or if we're just eating, you know, a lot of processed or really rough foods, like my broccoli example, you know, then we can continue to cause damage and it just may not have the chance to heal, like even just physically. Like if we just think about it as skin and we think, what would we do, you know, with our external skin? What would that look like? Does that make any sense?
Yes, that's a really good analogy. So clarification in case someone isn't quite following, when you mention skin, you're talking about the lining of the digestive tract, which would include well, even before this, but at least the stomach and the, you know, everything. Like, can you, I'll try to say this and you can add to it or make it sound a little easier to understand if necessary. But it's interesting when you think about the digestive system, it's actually, like, you could almost, like, take it out and it's self-contained. It's not, it shouldn't really interact so much with the rest of our body. Things, I mean, obviously the nutrients are being pulled out into the bloodstream, but we're not, things shouldn't be going back and forth as easily as they sometimes do. Would you agree?
Right, right. So, I mean, the liver is able to get rid of its toxins or whatever it wants to get rid of, mm-hmm. and we should be able to absorb, break down, and absorb our nutrients. But the actual larger particles shouldn't be going through. Yeah.
Right. And yet they are. I mean, it apparently, right? It's seems right. fairly common these days, even eating gluten can open up those tight junctions, right, in the intestines
sure.
and let things through.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so like you said, in hopefully in a really healthy individual, the repair will take place and you just go on. But for those that have other things happening,
right.
then maybe more attention needs to be made or taken
right.
to that.
Right,
okay.
Yeah, and it's a continual repair. It's like, you know, every day something's going to happen somewhere in the gut and our bodies are going to repair it. It's just we can't see what's going on.
Right, right. It's one of those invisible worlds that we know it's there, but we don't always take care or take attention because it's not looking us in the face until
right.
we've got joint pains and black and blue joints and the things you
exactly.
described, right? Or maybe not even to that degree, but we have something that
right.
takes gets our attention.
Right. But yeah, I never would have gone to my doctor and said, hey, I have bloating. Like, I just, you know, I power through stuff.
Right.
You know, it was only when those other things were going through into my body and causing a reaction that was so bad that I was debilitated that I kind of, you know, raised up the flag and said, hey, I need help. And so people reach out at that time, and then they go through the years of, you know, digging to figure out that they may have a leaky gut issue, and then they believe that they can solve it. And some people can feel a lot better after a few weeks, but after a few weeks of just working on a leaky gut healing program, and then just saying that it's over, people end up disappointed. But a lot of them are on the right path. It's just, they're not done yet.
Right.
You know, and we want to hear that there's like a thing. Everyone wants to get to the root cause, the one root cause, and then resolve it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's often, you know, interacting factors that have to just be kind of managed delicately and continually. And it's just that our health needs to continue to be a priority and not just be something, an issue to be solved, I think is the main thing there. It's more philosophical, I suppose.
Well, that's good, though. I mean, we do, I think, in all areas of life, we have some kind of a paradigm that we work from, that there are certain things we believe, and therefore we act a certain way. And so I think it's good that you're clearing up or allowing people to reevaluate their paradigm, because I think in order to get true healing, we're going to need to do that. We, you know, in the Western society, we want things quickly and we want to do it and be done. And
right.
I think that's what I'm hearing you say, is it doesn't necessarily happen that way. If we want
right.
to, we maintain, right? We maintain our health. We don't just get health. Right?
Yeah, you're so right, yeah. But like we've made a lot of progress. We've gone from like, I had a headache and I want to take an aspirin and just resolve that symptom
mm-hmm.
to
mm-hmm.
actually wanting to get to the root cause. And yet we're still using that same sort of flawed mentality, thinking that something can fix the root cause, when perhaps it's just something that is part of our health that's unique to us that needs to continue to be managed. Not entirely the best news, but good news in that there is so much that you can do to work on your gut health and to work on quote-unquote leaky gut. and inflammation in the body, you know, and that it is such a quick place in the body to heal. It's such a priority for the body. You know, within days we have all new cells in there. So yeah, I mean, it's really optimistic when you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
That things can continue to happen and we can handle it.
That's wonderful news. That's really great news. And I because I know you, I don't hear you saying that at the end of the day you say, I'm sorry, this is just who you are. These are just the issues you have. You just have to live with it. I don't hear
I
you saying
that. I
never say
that.
No, I mean, I'm just making sure that someone doesn't interpret what you said just a minute ago as that, because I think you were almost told something like that from a doctor. Am I right?
Yeah.
So
I have been.
And so I heard you say that maybe you're not going to see 100% resolution like you would like, or at least not instantly, but you can always work towards improvement. Is that what you were saying?
Yeah, or, you know, in time, there can be abundant and vibrant health.
Good.
But just to know that it, even when you have abundant and vibrant health, it still has to be a priority.
Okay, good. That's a good way to say it. That's a good way to say it. So I think
like
that
people with clean and glowing skin still wash their face.
Right. Okay. So it's about maintaining. It's about the constant attention we give to it, and not a once and done.
Totally. Yeah. That's totally what I mean.
Excellent. I knew there was. You're always a bearer of good news. So I knew that I didn't want anybody to. I didn't want anyone to walk away and hear you say, "I'm sorry. There's no hope for you."
No hope for you. That's totally not what I mean. But sometimes it's like, you know, for me, like talking about living in this rainy climate, I do better like in the desert. I do better when it's warm and dry. And so probably like to have my ultimate health solution, I would continue to do everything I'm doing right now and just move everything to Arizona.
Right.
That'd be awesome. I'm just not going to do that. So I'm just going to be like, okay, well, my choice is to live here, and there's a little more yeast here, and it's a little darker. I'm just going to take vitamin D. Okay.
Right. Right. And I can relate to that, too, in the Midwest and having, you know, some issues with seasonal affective disorder. And so I get that. I could move to California, and that would be very helpful to have all that sunshine. But I'm not. I'm staying here taking care of my chickens in my garden. So,
totally.
So yes, choices. I guess that's a good thing to highlight. We do have choices. And sometimes, you know, those are things that we could move if we wanted. And sometimes those are things we can't necessarily do.
Exactly.
But we take it all into account. We just put it in the big picture and we make our decisions based on that. And so, but they don't have to be limiting to the point of keeping us stagnant.
Yeah.
Right.
But
okay.
You don't have to be sick. Like you don't have to be lying on the couch in pain. Like that's
okay.
Not our natural way to be.
So Steph,
for the record.
Right. Okay. I'm glad you said that. And so for you, because you were there and I've been there at times too with adrenal fatigue and other issues. So you're there and now you've done a lot of things to get you where you're at, but you didn't stop. Right? You continually are aware of what your bacterial balance is, and you're continually doing things to try to manage, right?
Yeah. I mean, it can change so quickly, and it changes when we go on vacation. And but it's more just about incorporating those things into my life, like real fresh foods and fermented foods. And the benefits go beyond having good probiotics. I mean, it's really, it's like it's everything, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Because it is, let me just list a few other things that I would think you would agree that it is. It's about stress management. It's about exercise or movement.
Yep.
Oh, what else would you add?
Sleep.
It's about nutrition, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it's about laughter.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to have this camp. I've been talking to a colleague of mine, and we want to have like a camp where adults come for 2 weeks. We measure their you know, we test their gut bacteria at the beginning, and then we just have a really fun time eating fresh food, having comedians that we've hired, watching funny movies, like telling jokes, doing crafts, and then measure the gut bacteria at the end and see what the changes are. I bet you a million bucks things would be really different.
I agree with you. I agree. That would be a really happy belly, wouldn't it?
Totally. Someone send me money so I can do this.
Well, you know what? You know that I am one to do all kinds of interesting experiments with gut bacteria and things. So, that one might be in the mix. We can test our gut bacteria pretty easily, and I'll give people information on that if they're interested. But
yeah.
Well, that's. I mean, I know a friend of mine who was diagnosed with I won't say what it was, but a serious disease years ago, and part of her protocol for healing was laughing and, you know, finding something to strike her as humorous. That was actually part of her healing.
Great.
So there's something, I mean, we know it changes our body chemistry as well, but I wouldn't be surprised that the... stress
right.
in
well,
itself
it activates
changes.
Our immune system. It activates our immune system. Love and laughter, those hormones, they inform our immune system about how to behave. And our gut lining has all that mucosa that's lining and protecting our gut. And a big part of our immune system is in there. And that fends
right.
off bacterial. So even just to draw the line between laughter and the gut, I mean, that's it there. Yeah.
And I don't remember if laughter is another thing that stimulates the. I know there's a lot of talk about the vagus nerve, and we know that there's importance of all the nerves and all that, but there's a lot of connections between the gut and the rest of the body, kind of the center of our health, it seems. Is there anything else that you think is important to address as far as misconceptions or anything else that...
No, I think we've covered a lot of it. There's always hope, definitely. And everything has a solution. I strongly believe that. And just to not fall into those traps.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, good. You've given us a lot of great information here, and I'm sure that all of the people that are listening out there that are looking for greater health have a much clearer understanding of the realities of the kind of more encompassing healthy digestion now that you've cleared up some of these myths and misconceptions. So thank you so much for sharing your expertise and your experiences with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Linda.
Yeah, and I think what I'll do is I'll just, I'm going to have a page on my website where we can set up some parts of your courses or programs or, you know, information on those where people can connect with you more
right.
and get more information. I just can't
right.
imagine that people would not want to know more after what you've shared with us. It's pretty intriguing. So
give you guys some ebooks or something too, so hopefully we can post everything to that page.
Okay, great. That'd be wonderful. Yeah, so okay. that people can find that on, I'll just go ahead and give that address and then we can get up there what we think would be most helpful. So it's www.fitmehealthy.com/Steph-Jackson, and Steph is STEPH. So thank you again, Steph, for sharing with us, and thank you, all of you health-conscious people out there, for joining us in this amazing presentation about the myths and misconceptions surrounding healthy digestion and the real truth that will help you to get better health results. So again, I'm Linda Osmond, and thank you for joining us at on this Fit Me Healthy Smart Start coaching series. I'd like you to join me for more information at fitmehealthy.com/Steph Jackson, and wishing you, this is Steph's line, but I'm going to steal it and use it. No, actually, I'm going to have you say it. Go ahead, Steph. You can finish us out.
Yeah. So Linda and I, this is Linda and I signing off, and we're wishing you vibrant health and the freedom to live it.
To live it, yes. Thank you so much, Steph.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye-bye.